home and around the world. So if you're looking for financing to help your growing business, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Visit us online at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
Cody Chevrolet Cadillac has the best selection of GM-certified pre-owned vehicles, like the fuel-efficient Chevy Equinox and Traverse crossovers, and the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup, Chevy Silverado. Our GM-certified pre-owned vehicles come with 172-point inspection, a 12-month, 12,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty, a free 2-year, 24,000-mile maintenance plan. So stop by today and get a used vehicle you can trust at Cody Chevrolet Cadillac on the Barry Montpelier Road. Chevrolet. Find new roads.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little chilly out there this morning, and thank goodness we're up here in Essex Junction. Not much going on snow-wise. Happy about that. Thanks for joining us on the program this morning. We are broadcasting live today from the Vermont Farm Show in beautiful Essex Junction here at the Miller Buildings, and really big facility here. Things just really getting underway here. A bunch of meetings are going on here today. But vendors just starting to come in now and set up their booths. And we'll be featuring a bunch of really great guests coming your way on the program this morning. I'm looking forward to our discussions with many of the representatives here of the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Foods, and Markets. Coming up at 9:40 this morning, we'll talk with the Secretary, Chuck Ross. We have a lot to discuss with the Secretary this morning concerning water quality and the agency's role in trying to prevent more pollution going into Lake Champlain. So that's going to be the focus of our discussion with the Secretary this morning. And we're also going to be talking a little bit of maple here coming up. We're also going to talk about some promotional ideas that the agency is pursuing. And we'll also talk about meat inspection as well, too. Some changes going on that front. But some big changes in the maple world, and we're going to get to those in just a moment. Want to remind you, too, that it is Menashe Day here at the Vermont Farm Show. And we welcome you coming on over and saying howdy to us here at the WDEV and LVB booths here, and stopping over and pick up one of our great bumper stickers. And we got a few of the ice scrapers hanging around as well, too. So stop it over and say howdy and give us a wave, and we'll give you a wave back. And here's the other message that I would like to get crystal clear to you this morning. We would love to have you join us on the program, and it's easy to do. It's no different than if we had our guests back at the studio or if I'm down at the legislature. Just call us at the usual phone numbers, and those are 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We'll share with you some of the winners of some of the events that are going on here in terms of some of the contests that go on here, and we'll give you the full schedule of what's going to be happening here over the next 3 days. One other quick programming note for you. I'd like you to think, if you would so be kind to do, to think a little bit ahead of time here, because coming up tomorrow on the program, in our second hour, we're going to be chatting with Dr. Stephen Metz, who's an extraordinary veterinarian, now retired. And so I'd like, you know, if you could give some thought ahead of time here to some questions that you might have for the doc, that would be great, and then we'll, I'm sure we'll have a robust discussion with him. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome, and welcome back to the Mark Johnson Show. It's always fun to talk with Henry Marcus, who's the head of consumer affairs at the agency, but we know him more in his role as the maple specialist, I'm sorry, chief of consumer protection. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here.
So actually, let's talk a little bit, if we could, about this other role of yours, which I've somehow been remiss in talking about in prior years. The chief of consumer protection is basically, the job is what?
Well, consumer protection is a section within our agency that's in charge of all the weights and measures in Vermont. We have inspectors that are checking gas pumps, scanners in stores, package weights, oil delivery trucks, LP gas delivery trucks, amounts of firewood you purchase. So the weights and measures is a big part of our job. The other part is ag products.
Okay.
We actually, on retail shelves and at wholesale, check the quality and grading of things like apples, potatoes, strawberries, eggs, and of course maple syrup. And I more or less specialize with the maple syrup on my end of it.
How many people within the agency are doing this?
I have 7 people that work with me to do this, so there are 8 total.
Okay, that's a lot of products that you just named off.
It is. And probably the biggest job is there are over 7,000 gas pumps in Vermont that we check annually to make sure that they're, when you buy gas, you're getting what you pay for.
Okay. How often are those wrong?
Actually, not very often. We average between 1 and 2% a year that we find in error. And the errors that we find can either be in the customer's favor or in the station's favor.
Okay.
Because gas is a fairly abrasive material. And as it pump gets older, it wears the chamber a little. So you may actually be getting more gas than you're paying for.
Okay. Wow. Which station is it that had that problem? Wow, that, you know, you just never think that would happen.
No,
you always think you're going to get kind of shafted the other way.
Right, and you know, it we haven't found over the years, we haven't found more than a couple stations that what we call are predominantly short. That means that the minus reading is in all the pumps, and if we find something like that, we'll close that station for use till it's readjusted.
Wow. Is it easy for somebody to manipulate that?
No, not really. They have to get into the pump and know what they're doing to do it. We really don't find fraud like that here in Vermont. Some other states they do, but we're pretty fortunate here that most of the people that we have checked seem to be above board and want to do things the right way.
If there's something wrong, is there a little recalibration knob, or what is there?
It's a setting inside the pump. It can be reset, and then each pump has a ability to have a lead and wire seal, so it can't move. And we check for that every time we do a pump. And if we find the lead and wire seals are gone,
okay,
we make sure that they are replaced before we let that pump be used.
What's the other weighter measure that's most frequently off?
Scanners in stores. We find a fairly significant problem with scanners. And unfortunately, it is, we've never found a mechanical error with the laser scanners in stores. It's all human error, because what happens is when prices change, they need to get the sales signs down and get the new price up so a consumer knows what they're paying for a product. The way the law is written, the stores are allowed a 2% error. If it exceeds that, then they have to correct the items while we're there. Plus, they will get first, they'll get a warning, and then they could be subject to a fine if they don't do that. But there are a lot of stores that do a really good job with pricing, and some that aren't quite as on top of things.
Have you ever taken an enforcement action?
Absolutely. We
well, you mentioned you've closed or said gas stations close until they've refixed.
Yep.
Have you ever fined? Do you find people all the time?
Yeah, we. The last few years, we've probably averaged about $60,000 in fines on scanners a year. What we do is, as I said, and we do the same with all of our inspections, is the first violation we find, they have to give us what we call as a report of corrective action, what they did to fix the problem. If we find the same problem again, they're subject to a penalty. If they, again, after that, it's a higher penalty. So we have had some very significant penalties in the last few years on scanners. We've had some on lead and wire seals. We haven't had one on the gas pumps as far as the giving away or shorting people. But we check and make sure, and we have the ability to fine if we have to.
244-1777, that's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We're talking with Henry Marcus. He's the chief of consumer protection. He's also an expert when it comes to maple policy. And we're going to get to that discussion here in just a moment. Henry, I just got a load of wood delivered yesterday at my house. Does that look like it's exactly according to you?
Well, the only way we can tell is...
maybe you could help me move it this afternoon, and we could measure it as we go.
Well, you never know.
That'd be a good idea. And bring some maple.
Yeah. What we do on firewood, we get...
How would you have any idea if that's
a cord? We wouldn't. We get a lot of consumer complaints. The people are questioning whether they got the amount they paid for. We tell them the only way we can check is if it is piled up.
Okay.
And it's
all
actually
right.
The law says ranked and well stowed. So it's supposed to be piled as tight as possible.
Okay.
And then we will go out and measure. We don't fine anyone for that. What we do is supply the basically the third party measurement to assist people if they want to go to small claims court, because we don't have the ability to collect money for people.
Right.
We have found problems in the past, some of shortage. We have in our law it states that when you get a delivery of firewood, you're supposed to get a receipt that basically has your name, the seller's name and address, the amount of wood, the price per cord, and the type of wood.
Okay.
And a lot of sellers, you know, aren't used to that. They haven't done that. So we're trying to work with them. There's some information coming out from the agency to let people know what they have to do if they're selling wood, and to let buyers know what they should be looking for.
Let's talk maple here. Big change last year, calling for these new regulations, a new way of describing Vermont maple syrup.
Right.
We talked about it last year, but there was a year wait on implementation.
Right.
So people could use their labels up, or was
yes.
there another reason?
Well, pretty much. And also to work with producers and consumers to let them know of the change. Vermont did, we passed the law in 2014. It went into effect January 1st of 14, where last year the producers could use either the old grading system or the new one. As of January 1st this year, they're supposed to be using the new system. It looks like most other states, USDA, Ag Canada has passed it. It looks like everyone's going to follow suit. So the goal is to have grading of maple syrup in the maple region the same, and we just have to do a really good job of telling people how much better Vermont maple syrup is in the marketing. We've had some good comments from consumers with the new grades, because in addition to a color, there's also a flavor descriptor. And they feel it's a little better informed, that they can look at it and at least have some idea what that syrup is supposed to taste like in the container.
Okay. You've gotten some positive. I imagine you've probably gotten some negative, too.
Yes, of course. I'm a native Vermonter. I don't like change, but... After working on the committee, the international committee on this for 12 years, I can see the benefit in this. And from consumer standpoint, not only does it have the flavor descriptor, but it allows the very darkest grade of syrup, which people love for cooking, to be sold in retail shelves legally. So I think the whole change is a positive, and I think it will help the industry. We'll just have to keep working with it and keep advising people how to do it correctly.
How's it going to benefit Vermont?
I think it benefits Vermont. We export a lot of syrup to other countries, and when a supplier from Vermont is trying to compete against other states and Canada, for instance, with the darkest grade, we always call that grade B.
Okay.
Most consumers think that grade B is an inferior grade.
Right.
So we're at a disadvantage there. So I think the change,
kinda
all
like the
of
B side of an album isn't as good as
yeah,
that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
all of the grades now that are sold in retail are grade A, even down to the very darkest grade. And anything that doesn't meet those grades, either for clarity, density, or flavor, is processing grade, and that has to be sold in bulk to a processor for making into something else.
Okay. How is Vermont, though, going to, if the labeling's all the same, everybody's using the same label, how are we going to say we're so much better than everybody else?
Okay. Our density requirement, which means the amount of sugar that's been concentrated in the product, is higher than any other state or province. That was in the old law. We kept it in the new one. We feel that what that does is gives us a flavor edge above other places, and we've never really marketed that a lot, and I think we need to. That would set us apart. Also, just the name Vermont, over the years, in conjunction with Maple, we have kind of an edge on the market, and we need to just make sure that we have the best quality possible. And I think we'll maintain our place in the marketplace and improve it.
How was last year?
Last year was very good. Trying to think, I believe that the national ag statistics said there were about 1.3 million gallons produced in Vermont, which is huge. We have a big expansion in Vermont of taps every year. This year, I'm expecting another big increase. About 12 years ago, we estimated there were 1 million taps in Vermont. Last year, the estimate was 5 million. I think it's going to be probably up toward 5.5 or better this year.
Okay, say that number again. It went from 1 to 5 million in what period of time?
In about 12 years.
That's pretty
dramatic. Amazing. And the pricing structure for maple syrup has been strong, mainly due to Canada. They have a federation that manages the price in Canada, and they have kept the bulk price high. Even though the supply was high, basically to keep people in it and operating at a profit, and that translates down here to the States too for the bulk syrup, which kind of drives the retail price.
Right. How do Vermont retailers or producers sell their product outside of Vermont? What, is it all online at this point?
No, we still have some that have a mail order. They have a little catalog that goes out. There's a lot online at this point. I mentioned the exports. I do the what's called a free sale certificate for any maple syrup going out of the country.
Okay.
And that basically is just attesting to the fact that maple syrup is a regulated commodity and it has to meet certain standards. And we're doing just unbelievable amounts of selling to other countries. A couple weeks ago, I did one order for a company in Australia that took 10,000 cases of syrup in one order.
Jeez. Wow. Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yep. Thanks for your time this morning.
Well,
always
glad,
nice to see you, too.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Henry Marcus is the he's the chief of consumer protection for the entire agency, and then he's also a specialist when it comes to maple syrup. He actually can tell you which county that the syrup comes from. Yeah, he has that kind of the golden tongue. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. We're broadcasting live this morning at the Vermont Farm Show. It is Menashe Day here at the Vermont Farm Show. Back after this.
802 Honda promised super friendly service with low pricing, and you heard us. Thanks to all of our customers for making 802 Honda the fastest growing Honda dealer in Vermont.
At 802 Honda, we love to listen. Our Lease It Your Way program is designed to customize a lease for both your budget and driving needs.
You can drive away every new Honda with absolutely no money down, or pick your payment, and we will show exactly how much money down you need. The biggest myth about leasing is mileage. We're custom designing leases for higher mileage drivers all the time, often with 20,000 miles or more. Let us custom tailor a lease your way.
Find out what many of your neighbors already know. 802 Honda is the only place to get your next Honda. We also have the top-ranked service department in Vermont.
Click on 802honda.com. Call 223-9700. Drive I-89 to exit 7. We're less than 1 minute off the interstate. 802 Honda, driving to be Vermont's number one Honda dealer.
I'm Brandy Jacobin, a Vermonter and a mother. I believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure because I want my kids to live long, healthy lives. It's no wonder that one-third of Vermont kids are overweight or obese when sugar-added drinks are the largest source of their calories. Increasing the price of sugary drinks with a 2 penny per ounce tax would make unhealthy drinks more expensive for kids while funding programs in Vermont communities that help kids be more active. 2 pennies an ounce for prevention, 2 pennies an ounce for our kids. You can learn more at healthiervt.org.
Here's another Vermont Lottery Extreme Fun Alert. The Powerball jackpot is getting very large. You may want to go immediately to your nearest Vermont Lottery agent to purchase a Powerball ticket.
Knee deep. Knee deep. Knee deep. deep.
Hey, what's with the frog? It just showed up one day.
Yeah, I thought frog said ribbit. This one says knee deep.
Frogger is here from the Vermont Lottery. Based on the classic Frogger game, you can win up to $5,000 instantly. Play the instant ticket. Play online. You can even play on your smartphone. Buy Frogger today and be
knee deep
in fun from the Vermont Lottery. Courtesy of Konami Digital Entertainment. Please play responsibly.
Knee deep.
This is an extreme fun alert reminder. The Powerball jackpot is getting very large. Buy your ticket today.
All profits benefit the Vermont Education Fund. Please play responsibly.
Today's estimated annuitized jackpot is $261 million.
For the heaviest built, most reliable three-point and trail disc mowers, mower conditioners, tedders, rotary rakes, and round balers on the market, discover Krone from Northeast Farm Sales and Service in Irisburg. Stay in the field and out of the shop with Krone hay and forage equipment on display this week at the Vermont Farm Show, Champlain Valley Fairgrounds, Essex Junction, and at Northeast Farm Sales and Service, Route 5, the Coventry Road, Irisburg. NortheastFarmService.com. Quality hay and forage equipment, another Krone exclusive.
Ever since we teamed up to form the new McMahon Chevy Buick, folks from all over the state have been saving money. Hi, this is Steve Says from McMahon.
And I'm Ed Dever, sales manager at McMahon. We've got the biggest inventory in our history of new and used vehicles on our two lots. McMahon has even added the import corner, where we always have a nice selection of late model, low mileage imports. You get top dollar for your trade because, with our used car business being up 500%, we're keeping more used vehicles than ever.
McMahon is loaded with new Buicks and Chevys, including the Silverado and the all-new redesigned Colorado. You can check our inventory out online at McMahonChevrolet.com and like us on Facebook for all of our crazy offers. Just think about what you could do with all the money you're going to save.
Yeah, you could get a Caribbean island.
An island? Come on, Ed. They're going to save some money, but come on.
The new McMahon Chevy Buick on the corner of Route 15 and Route 100 in Morrisville. You've got to get here.
And remember our Cash for Junkers program. You'll get a minimum trade allowance of $3,000 towards any used vehicle in stock. Save big on your next car or truck at the new McMahon Chevy Buick. Come see for yourself. At the new McMahon, we make deals the other guys won't. Chevy, find new roads.
We're broadcasting live this morning at the Vermont Farm Show, and coming up in about 10 minutes here, we'll talk with Secretary Chuck Ross. Right now, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome to a couple of folks who are living in the world of trying to develop more business here for Vermont. Reg Godin is a senior market development specialist, and Chelsea Lewis is a business development administrator. And they're both joining us here. Chelsea, let me start with you. Good morning. What have you been working on?
Sure. So since I talked to you last, we've formed a team around business development at the agency. We were able to bring Reg on. He's a wayward Vermonter, I've been saying, down in D.C., but we brought him back to Vermont, and we've really refocused our business development team around the Working Lands Program as well as some international and domestic export opportunities.
What does the Working Lands proposal have to do with business development?
The Working Lands Program is really all about job creation. So we measure our success by the number of jobs created, by increased revenues to Vermont farmers and forest businesses, and then, of course, keeping our wonderful Vermont landscape open, by keeping businesses on the land.
Tell people, what is the Working Lands Program?
Sure. It's a has been in the past 3 years a $1 million initiative in each of the past 3 years to go out to Vermont food and forest businesses to help them grow. Also, a significant amount of the funds go to service providers to provide critical technical assistance to these businesses to make sure that they're reinvesting in the right places and sustainable into the future.
The governor's budget talked about cutting this program by a pretty significant amount, down from 1.2 down to $500,000, a $700,000 cut. I'm sure that's a big haircut.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's not fun to see your program get cut, but it's a difficult budget year, and given all of the challenging decisions that have to be made with critical human services on the table, we certainly understand that we all need to give a little bit, and we're in support of the governor's budget proposal. We think that there's a lot of creative things we can continue to do with $500,000, and look forward to continuing to do the work. We have a wonderful board, some of the brightest folks working in food and agriculture and forestry across the state. So good work will continue to be done.
Can you give me some idea how the $500,000 would be spent?
Sure. It would be mostly focused on the service provider investment area, which, as I said, provides this continuum of technical assistance to businesses across the working landscape. So businesses like our organizations like the Food and Forest Viability Program, which work one-on-one with businesses to help them grow and figure out where they need to reinvest in their business.
Reg, let me get you over here a little bit. Reg Godin, so where do you fit into all this?
Yeah, so thanks, Mark. I was brought on to the agency, as Chelsea mentioned, this fall in September, and I was brought on to help in creating the domestic export program, which was created in the 2014 legislative session. That program, that legislative language was to connect Vermont producers to brokers, buyers, distributors, and out-of-state markets, and provide technical assistance and marketing assistance to help leverage those connections into, you know, sales, business relationships, and so forth.
What were you doing in Washington?
I mean, I was doing a number of things in D.C., but the last 4 years, I was working as a director of market operations for Fresh Farm Markets. They ran producer-only farmers markets and a number of other food-related programs.
Okay, so what are the products that you're talking about that you're trying to develop outside the state?
Sure. You know, we're developing, you know, any product that is produced in the state, but, you know, with a focus on products that include agricultural inputs. So we're looking at maple, dairy, produce, and a lot of specialty foods. As you know, we have a lot of great specialty food producers in the state, and we work closely with the Vermont Specialty Food Association, particularly in the Summer Fancy Food Show coming up. So that's actually a big focus of the program. And right now we have open are the trade show assistant grants. So Vermont producers can apply for matching grants to go to trade shows outside the state.
Okay. You know, maple seems an obvious product that we would really promote here, but what else is going to be really successful? Because I'm imagining that you've got to pick your shots to some degree.
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at it, there's a whole array of successful businesses that have come from Vermont, whether it's Ben & Jerry's and ice cream, Lake Champlain chocolates, Cabot Creamery. You know, across the way here, we have Vermont Creamery and their great goat cheeses and everything that they make. So I think maple is an obvious one, but I think, you know, there's a lot of dairy. There's, you know, folks that are making jams, or you look at Tonewood, you know, out of Vermont. They won a Sophie Award this last year at the Summer Fancy Food Show. So there's a lot of great artisanal producers in Vermont that can find a niche.
Where's the line here between letting these businesses do their thing and you helping in the role of the state helping a business?
Yeah, you know, I think that's for the business to identify where they need assistance, and that's part of the thing we're looking at with this program is, you know, how do we connect the businesses that need the assistance and might not know it, and to the great service providers that there are, that Chelsea mentioned, you know, in the Working Lands program. There's a lot of great service providers that can provide assistance in business development and marketing. And I think, you know, as a business, you have to know what those resources are available to you and really utilize them.
So these businesses come to the agency and get what?
You know, from us, we're going to guide them. I think, you know, again, there's a great technical assistance service provider network out there, so we can help connect them to the folks that can provide the assistance through the Trade Show Assistance Grant Program. It's going to be a results-based program, so they're going to need to focus on sales at the show, buyer leads, and just kind of really guide them in the direction that they need to go in order to leverage these trade shows into business relationships.
How are you promoting Vermont dairy outside of Vermont?
Vermont dairy, we're working with the dairy promotion, a number of different initiatives, but Boston Public Market is one where we're hoping to get in and have a Vermont source booth retail stand. This is a new indoor market that's coming to the Haymarket District in Boston. And it's 28,000 square feet of retail space. And so that's set to open in June 2015. And Chelsea and I have been working to get a Vermont booth in there that would feature Vermont products such as dairy products and the other great products that I mentioned. And I think we're also working on some stuff in other northeast regions, Philadelphia, and, you know, New York is a great market too. So I think, you know, we're going to look there as well.
What are you going to be spending the next year doing?
Good question. You know, certainly continuing to focus, jobs is a major priority of the agency right now, so continuing to focus on helping businesses grow if they're ready to grow. We are excited about really this, the new possibilities that the Working Lands Program has in the coming year, making sure that businesses, as Reg said, are aware of the technical assistance available to them, and that if there are any holes in that continuum of technical assistance, that we're able to make sure there's programming for all businesses across the state.
What do you not have that you would need to do a better job?
You know,
time. I think, you know, we're just, oh, here, let me give you some. Right. You know, I just think, you know, there's a lot to do and there's a lot of great businesses to focus on. I think we have something like 22,000 small businesses in Vermont, and that's a huge number. And so, you know, more people, manpower, just to, you know, really help these businesses and for us to be able to provide the good services that we can.
It's like only 70 a day or something, or maybe I'm doing the math wrong.
Right.
So if, what's the one thing that you're missing in your job that if you had more of, you'd do a better job? Time was the last answer.
You know, I think we've got a great team. I've been at the agency now for almost 5 years. And when I came on, we were a smaller and even more efficient team. We've gained some people. We have a great team. We're working really closely with partners. I think we're working in new and creative ways with our partners in other state agencies, which has been exciting. So I think we're well positioned for 2015.
Thank you both for your time this morning. We're going to take a short break. We're broadcasting live at the Vermont Farm Show. Coming up next, we'll talk with the secretary of the agency. Chuck Ross will be joining us right after this.
Hey, what's with the frog? It just showed up one day.
Yeah, I thought frogs said ribbit. This one says knee deep.
Frogger is here from the Vermont Lottery. Based on the classic Frogger game, you can win up to $5,000 instantly. Play the instant ticket. Play online. You can even play on your smartphone. Buy Frogger today and be knee deep in fun from the Vermont Lottery. Courtesy of Konami Digital Entertainment. Please play responsibly.
Knee deep. Barry Electric and Lighting Supply is moving. But not very far. Barry Electric and Lighting Supply on the Barry Montpelier Road is moving just across the parking lot to the building next door. But it's last call and lights out. Because Barry Electric's moving sale will end very, very soon on Friday, February 6th at 5 p.m. sharp. So now you have less than 2 weeks to visit Barry Electric, where every single lighting fixture in the showroom has been marked down. We're talking chandeliers, sconces, outdoor lighting, table lamps, and floor lamps. Prices are even lower than the manufacturers are willing to advertise, including Made in Vermont and American-made fixtures. So it's time to bust a move for the final days of the Barry Electric moving sale. Barry Electric and Lighting Supply. Their lights out. In quality, design, and comfort. The moving sale ends Friday, February 6th at 5 p.m. sharp at Barry Electric and Lighting Supply on the Barry Montpelier Road.
Make sure you stop by the Cooperative Insurance Company's booth at the Vermont Farm Show in Essex this week. See the many insurance options available to you for your farm, home, business, auto, and mini farm, all from a Vermont-based insurance company with fast and fair claim service. The Co-op is a Vermont-based insurance company. See why they say you can count on the Co-op. Look for the Co-op at the Vermont Farm Show this week in the Miller Complex at Champlain Valley Fairgrounds.
This is Roger Williams from 802 Toyota. On behalf of our entire staff, I would like to thank all of our sales, service, and parts customers for your loyalty and partnership in 2014. We know you expect the best service and prices from us, and that's what keeps you coming back to 802 Toyota for all of your automotive needs. We welcome your feedback, good or otherwise, and we thank you for making our service department the top-ranked Toyota dealer in Vermont for customer satisfaction. Our climate-controlled service drive-thru and our complimentary shuttle service make it easy to keep your car truck in top condition. We stock a huge inventory of pre-owned Toyota cars and trucks, including a great selection of Toyota certified vehicles. Great service, great prices, and our drive to be the best are why you should come in to check us out. We're easy to find. Just click on 802toyota.com, call 844-802-TOYOTA to speak to a member of our helpful customer service team, or drive to exit 7 off I-89. We're just 2 minutes off the exit. 802 Toyota, driving to be Vermont's number one Toyota dealer.
We're back broadcasting live this morning at the, I was almost about to say the State House, but that would be kind of far off here. This is about as far from the State House as you can get. We're broadcasting live this morning at the Vermont Farm Show here in Essex Junction. We're going to get right down to our discussion here. Let's give a nice Farm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Secretary of the Agency of Agriculture. Chuck Ross is joining us. Secretary, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
Great, Mark. How are you?
I'm great. We're going to talk a little bit about Lake Champlain and water quality, and there's been some recent discussion about enhanced enforcement efforts to try to get at some of this pollution. I want to ask you, though, because I was looking up this morning what the Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets is all about, and it says here on your website that it facilitates, supports, and encourages the growth of the viability of agriculture while protecting the working landscape, human health, animal health, plant health, consumers, and the environment. Can you actually promote and enforce at the same time?
Yes, I think we can. And, you know, you just started off saying we're all about enforcement here and with respect to water quality. And actually, the emphasis, Mark, is on enhancing stewardship. Enforcement is necessary because there are times when people just don't do it right. But what we have in the state of Vermont when it comes to water quality is the need for all of us to be in on the solution. That includes agriculture. And what we need in the way of a solution is an enhanced culture of stewardship, of doing the right things on the land and with our waters, where we engage in practices that we know will improve the water quality. And it's not just the responsibility of agriculture, although the responsibility is significant for agriculture. It's a responsibility of all of us. In Lake Champlain, which is the focus point oftentimes of the discussions around water quality, has real issues. And these are not issues that have been created in the last year or two or five. They've been created, frankly, over decades. And they were created by all of us. We all have to own our collective responsibility for the condition Lake Champlain's in, and we all have to own our responsibility to be part of the solution. And what's clear to me, Mark, is that the agriculture community understands they have had a role, they understand they're going to need to play a role, and they are engaged in that conversation, and that's enormously positive. And we need to have all Vermonters understand we all have a role to play as individuals and as part of the industries and communities that which we're a part.
But having this be voluntary hasn't worked, has it?
We have not done a good job resourcing the ability to be do it voluntarily. We passed the AAPs, the Accepted Agricultural Practices, in 1995, and with that, we got a staff of zero. When I came into the agency in 2011, I discovered we had a staff of four to manage and assist with the water quality efforts of our agriculture community. At that time, there were 7,300 farms in Vermont. Those four individuals were focused on the largest dairy farm operations in the state. We didn't have staff to deal with the other close to 7,000 farms that were present in Vermont at that time. We have made a lot of promises collectively as a Vermont community about wanting and expecting good water quality, but we have not provided the resources to enable those people who have a responsibility and have an opportunity to take action to be able to know what they're supposed to do and be able to do it.
Then why weren't you pounding the table like, you know, Khrushchev at the UN demanding more staff?
We have rolled out right now a whole comprehensive proposal for the legislature and have initiated a number of conversations on a number of areas that are not legislatively oriented. Part of that includes our response to the EPA's TMDL, Total Maximum Daily Load, proposal, in which we call for seven new staff people in the Agency of Agriculture to do that work. We spent the first year and a half to 2 years dealing with Irene and the recovery there, too, and have spent the last couple of years putting together not a cookie-cutter, quick-fix response to water quality, but what we believe is a thoughtful, comprehensive, and meaningful response that will make a difference. That includes a request for more staff, for sure. What it also includes is the kinds of resources we believe are necessary to equip the people in the state, in the farming community in this case, with the resources they need to voluntarily comply. Because we understand, having talked to those farmers, they understand their job, they understand their role, they do want to take responsibility, they care about the waters of the state, and many of them have taken many, many steps with the resources that have been available to do a good job. We need to help them take more. Clearly, there are situations in every community where there's some people that don't do it the right way or refuse to do it, and for those people, we have introduced some additional changes to our enforcement process so we can be more speedy more significant and meaningful in the nature of the enforcement to make sure those individuals are dealt with quickly and that they don't continue to paint the rest of the good actors with their bad brush. The point is the vast majority of people in the agriculture community want to do the right thing, are trying to do the right thing, and our job is to help them get that right thing done.
Okay, but I mean, a lot of people want to do the right thing, but wanting to do the right thing seems kind of like, you know, thinking about a pumpkin and thinking it's somehow going to magically grow. It just doesn't seem as though you've now proposed changing the rules so that it used to be that you couldn't apply these practices unless there was money to help the farmers. Why are you talking about changing that so that money wouldn't be required? How's that help the farmer?
Well, what we've done is we've assembled in partnership with a lot of organizations, including our federal delegation and the USDA, millions of dollars that are going to be available for what we call stewardship, which are the practices that we understand based on scientific analysis that actually mitigate and reduce phosphorus on the farms. They are practices like no-till seeding, contour plowing, buffer strips, grass waterways, cover crops, barnyards, manure injection, many practices with which we have some familiarity already. Our job is to work with the community of people that are in agriculture and are supporting agriculture to help those farmers understand where and when and how they can implement those practices and provide some support to do so. If you recall, back in the 60s and 70s, we had another water quality problem of great magnitude. It was point source pollution.
Right.
And we had effluent percolating into our ditches and our villages and our towns and going into the streams from residential septics, from various sources of commercial activity. And we, as a society, spent millions and millions of dollars installing solutions called wastewater treatment plants.
Okay.
That was a significant investment on the part of all of us. We're looking at a similar problem nationally on this water, non-point water quality issue. And we are assembling here in Vermont, thanks to this partnership with the USDA, a significant number of resources to address that are federal resources, because this is a problem that faces all of us. The farmers have done what we've asked them to do for many years, and what we've asked them to do was not as well informed in terms of science and practice as we would have liked. And we, as a collective community, whether it be the farmers or the stormwater that comes off the parking lots that we just direct it to a ditch and then direct it to the lake, all those are problems we've all been complicit in letting happen and have created problems for Lake Champlain and other water bodies. We all need to step up and implement solutions. It's going to take a wide range of resources. It's going to take the ongoing commitment of farmers' time and money, assisted by our collective taxpayer time and money and the way the resources we pulled together with the USDA.
Was enforcement not done before by the agency because you had the lack of manpower or because you wanted to work cooperatively with the farmers and felt that was a better strategy?
We've been short on our ability to do enforcement in situations where we might have liked to, because we didn't have the staff to know there wasn't even an enforcement issue there. We have relied upon complaints to identify enforcement problems among the farms that are not statutorily required to be inspected. Those are the large farm operations, 700 cow equivalents and above, and the medium farm operations, which are 200 to 700 cow equivalents. Those are permits that we implement and regulate and inspect on a regular basis. The rest of the farms, and those I should note are the work of our four staff people in 2011. We now have five. The rest of the farms in the state of Vermont, we have not had the staff to do the education, the outreach, the technical assistance, and the compliance, and where necessary, the enforcement.
So when people say you've dropped the ball or that the agriculture community hasn't done enough, You're not buying that.
You know, this your conversation leads to the kind of finger-pointing that I don't think is very constructive. We have not done enough, and that's we, all of us. You know, we have all hoped that we had the actions in place to protect and enhance our water quality, but we haven't, and that's evident. It's evident in Lake Champlain.
Okay, but let me understand something here. You know, you're saying that we're all collectively responsible for the lake, and I hear you on that. But the agriculture community has been identified as being a source of 40% of this. You're in charge of the Agency of Agriculture. Has there been enough, and I'm not interested in finger-pointing here, I'm trying to learn from the past here. Has there been enough enforcement in the past? Because you're now talking about new enforcement measures.
And again, you go to enforcement, and I'm saying there hasn't been enough resources on stewardship to help the farmers do what they could and should do, because first they weren't aware of it, because we haven't had adequate outreach and education. We haven't had the appropriate level of technical assistance to help them comply with the water quality standards. We have at times, for example, I think it was a year and a half ago, we offered the opportunity for farmers to do cover cropping at a very favorable rate, and we are oversubscribed. We have run short of the engineers necessary to help design the solutions on the farms, because there are more farmers who want to get it done than we had engineers. So it's not for a lack of will on the part of the agricultural community of farmers. It's a lack of support resources that we collectively have been able to provide them.
Okay.
And so now we are aimed at increasing our stewardship, increasing the resources, increasing in terms of monetary resources, and thanks to our congressional and USDA efforts, increasing our staff, redeploying our staff, and increasing our partnerships across the state.
Okay.
That is the major thrust. And you know, everybody... Not everybody. Many people want to divert to the conversation about enforcement. We're not going to enforce our way to clean water. We are going to collaborate our way to clean water through partnerships and community and increasing the culture of stewardship in this state, where we all take responsibility and support each other.
A lot of people would argue that hasn't worked.
Well, we have not had the resources at the table to help that make that
but
work.
But if they're not there, if the lack of resources is the problem, and it's not the farming community did anything wrong, why are you bringing up this idea of potentially at some point you might get kicked out of current use if you don't do the right thing?
Because, like with every population of people, whether it's athletes or business people or farmers or actors, there's a bell curve of different kinds of people, and there are some that just refuse to do the work that they're asked to do. And in the last 6 months, we have collaborated with the Attorney General's office to bring suit against a limited number of individuals who have chosen not to comply after having a number of conversations with us about how they could, where they could get resources, help them get it done, and they have chosen not to. And we've prosecuted them successfully and levied significant fines. That is a message, without a doubt, that we're serious about wanting people to comply with the water quality standards in the state of Vermont that were passed initially in the AAPs in 1995. And we're saying those AAPs and the water quality standards in the state of Vermont do matter. And we're willing to help you understand how you can comply with them. And for those limited number of individuals who choose not to, we will enforce, and we'll enforce in a way that it's not just the cost of doing business, but that'll be in meaningful enforcement. And so we're seeking changes in the enforcement procedures that will enable us to be a little quicker to address egregious problems and be a little stiffer, so it's not just a cost of doing business, that it's a meaningful penalty if you're going to choose not to comply with the standards that the vast majority of people are complying with. And the point is, it's not fair to the vast majority who work really hard, spend real time and money to do the right thing, and have someone else not do the right thing and get away with it. And so we're saying, let's make this a fair situation, and for those limited number, have meaningful enforcement, so the rest of them are treated fairly and get a fair shake. It's We don't want to give the polluters a competitive advantage in that marketplace.
What would it take for somebody to get kicked out of current use?
We are proposing that they proceed through the administrative enforcement process that we currently use, where we it's basically a three-step process that starts with a letter that says you have issues and you need to correct them. If they don't, then we give them a note of violation with a fine, and if they still don't do it, we bring them in for a hearing if they would like, where we have a face-to-face conversation with an official administrative proceeding, and we write an order up that says this is what you need to do. If they are not willing to do those things after those conversations and pointing them at the resources that could be available to help them, then we would recommend, we would tell the tax department that this particular individual should have their current use tax abatement suspended or stopped until they're in compliance with the water quality standards of the state. We believe that there's three things you need to understand about that proposal. One, you don't need to worry about it if you comply with the water quality standards of Vermont. Easily avoidable. Two, there's due process. Three, the taxpayers of the state of Vermont help fund the current use program. And why would the taxpayers of the state of Vermont want to continue to fund a current use program for those individuals who are imposing costs on all of us by polluting the waters of the state because they're not in compliance with the clean water standards that we do have?
You're now talking about, instead of recommending best management practices, requiring them.
That's correct.
Why that change?
Because we believe the best management practices will make a difference. And we need to elevate, after our experience and looking at what we've been doing, we believe we need to elevate the minimum regulatory floor of performance for the practices that we choose to put on the land. And we understand, because the evidence is clear, that when you put buffer strips in, that you mitigate the amount of discharge that would go to the waters of the state. We know contour plowing, we know no-till seeding makes a difference. And, you know, what's so inspiring for me, and the reason why I believe we can have a really vital agricultural economy and community and clean water, is when I hear a farmer go to Vergennes, as I experienced 2 weeks ago, meet with a cluster of other farmers, of which were probably about 50, and about 50 other people, and sit there for 3.5 hours and listen to one another talk about what practices work best. And at the end of the night, all the people that were not farmers had left. The farmers, the ones who were going to get up anywhere from 3 to 5 hours later, were there till 10:30, 11 o'clock, listening to one another about what they can do differently and how and why it works, including one farmer who said, I started no-till seeding about 7 years ago. I was a little suspicious about whether it'd be successful. Now I'm a completely devoted and a believer in no-till seeding because I have seen what happens to the soil. I've seen its ability to absorb water and nutrients. I have better crops. It costs me less. I save money, and I mitigate the impact of my practices on the waters of the state. That's inspirational. Not only to me as someone who is thinking about this all the time, but also to the farmers in the room who stayed there for 3.5 hours to hear about what they could do differently. That's the kind of commitment we need.
I'm talking with Secretary of the Agency of Agriculture, Chuck Ross. We're going to take a couple of minutes here, go past our news here. Let's take a couple of calls, maybe put these on here. We're going to talk to Justin and Randolph. Good morning, Justin.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I heard the word collaboration earlier by Mr. Ross. For the last 5 years, I've been trying to have the agency come down and do something on my farm in relation to the BMP programs, to no success, to the point where I don't even get calls back or get paid a visit. The lady we were working with changed jobs, so then I just got forgotten about. I didn't even get forwarded to anybody. Secondly, we had a grant through the Agency of Ag that helps with assistance to update our nutrient management plan. We put that on hold because we were working with NRCS through their EQIP program, and numerous times we called and checked on the status of the grant and was told that it was still there. Just recently, I got a letter in the mail, or a postcard, a yellow postcard from the Agency of Agriculture stating that the agency is no longer to provide assistance or funding to help with nutrient management plans and to contact NRCS. So if there's collaboration, why are we not providing assistance or even just administrative assistance with nutrient management plans? Why is the agency washing their hands of that? And why is it so difficult to access the BMP programs for small farms?
All right. Thanks, Justin. I appreciate your call.
Thanks,
Secretary.
Good. Justin, thanks for bringing this to my attention. And I'm not aware of every communication we have with the farmers out there. If we had a person who left the agency, that may have been our mistake on the handoff from one staff person to the other. The change on the nutrient management planning is a reallocation of our resources to the things that we can fund with state dollars and let the feds fund the things they can do with federal dollars to stretch the money we do have further. I'm happy to bring your situation up with the staff in the agency and see how we can get back in touch with you. This is one of the challenges when we don't have staff that can be focused solely on the small farm operations and then need to be focused on the LFO and MFO permits that we manage on a regular basis. And I hope that in a year or two from now, we won't have this kind of call where we have someone who wants to do the right thing and we haven't been able to assist as well as we should. We are not perfect, and we are trying to get better, and your situation is a matter I'd like to try to remedy. And I'm hopeful, as I said, with some more resources, this is a kind of conversation we won't have to have in the future.
Is the staffing increases that you talked about 10 minutes ago going to make that big a difference on the numbers that you talked about that were huge?
They are huge. And, the number I used was 7,300 as defined by the USDA's definition of agriculture, which is $1,000 of sales and above. Many of those are probably not what you and I would consider real robust or meaningful farms, but they're people that are engaged in the commerce of agriculture. So the number is probably less than 7,100 non-LFO, MFO farms, but it's significant. And we're going to rely upon not only an increased staffing in the agency if it is approved, but it's going to be the partnerships and the collaborations with all the other people who visit farms. This has to be a community-wide effort in agriculture, as it does on many other issues around and other sectors that are contributors to this problem. But in agriculture, there are many people that visit the farms. We need everybody who's visiting farms and working with farmers to understand clean water is a top priority, and there are resources and there are regulations and there are technical assistance that can be brought to bear. And if we have that conversation happening all the time, then I think we can, an increase in staff at our agency, coupled with a collaborative effort with our many, many partners, we can make a big difference. And at the end of the day, if you're going to look at just the state itself, the state government to solve this problem, we can't do it alone. This is got to be a community collaborative effort where we all help each other, that we encourage each other, that we support each other to understand what it is you could do. It's like what I witnessed in Virgin's a couple weeks ago when farmers hung with each other for 3.5 hours to understand what other folks are doing, what they could learn, how it works, what level of success they have. Because farmers are very, creative, they're very self-reliant, and they are not afraid to just do things because it's the right thing to do. And I know I've been on enough farms. There are a lot of things you can do on the farm that doesn't cost a lot of money but can have a big impact if you know what it is that you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can create that culture where we're always identifying those little things as well as the big things that a farmer can do, I think we can make real progress.
But the other thing that I'm sort of hearing, though, in your message to the legislature and other folks is that even if there's not money that you can provide to farmers, they still need to comply with these regulations.
That's right. We have to...
That sounds kind of newish. a little heavier, stronger line than you've taken before. And a change.
Yeah, and that is, there is a change in some of the language. And what's interesting, and people don't realize, is we have, when we deal with farms, we've been asking them to comply with best management practices anyway, whether the resources were there or not. We said, you need to get this done and get it done the right way. What we're trying to do now is say to the farming community, we have assembled an array of resources that we believe can help. And it's not, that's not to suggest that you don't have any responsibility at all and that you have to, you only have to do something when somebody's going to help you. But you need to do things the right way anyway, because we need to make a difference. And that is your responsibility. And the AAPs have been on the books since 1995. And so we are saying you need to comply with those. And when you have a significant issue, if you deal with us or the NRCS or some of the other partners, we will try to identify the technical assistance that we can provide to help you get it done. But we can't allow people to have significant emissions to the waters of the state and just to, and turn our head. And quite frankly, we've never done that. We, given are the resources that we've had, when we get a complaint, we try to get out there within 24 hours and see what's going on. Sometimes we'll get there on time, sometimes we'll miss it. That's the nature of the regulatory side. You don't always get there every time, right at the right minute to see the incident, but we try to follow up. And with everybody engaged, we can hopefully create a culture where it's not just us, up to us to chase out there when we get a complaint, but it's all of us helping one another understand, you need to do things differently. Let's see how we can, you know, how can I help you? Here's where the resources can be. Here's the practices I implemented. And the good news is some of these practices, and many of these practices, are good for the farm. They save money. They enhance their own situation, like cover crops. When you put cover crops on, they're great about reducing the overland flow and help infiltration, which prevents water pollution, but it's also great for the soil. It increases our organic content. It increases in water infiltration. The soil tilt improves, and it is a green manure in and of itself when it's plowed in. So those are all good things for the farm.
Right.
So it's one of those things that when you understand, oh, if I could do cover crops, you know, that's something I had to do anyway.
Okay. Can we go back to November here? The Conservation Law Foundation had this petition. They wanted to see these best management practices required, not recommended. That sounds like what you're doing now.
That
no? Yes?
As I said in the decision, and they were, we're very much sympathetic with what they wanted us to do. And
you sounded pretty dismissive with it. Appreciate, you know, what you have to say. It sounded, it came across to me as a little dismissive, but maybe it's just me.
Well, what they asked us to do, I, you know, this is one of those legal proceedings where I need to be careful about what I say. It's our, it's being appealed. If you read the conclusions of the of my response, there's three reasons that are set forth as the basis upon which I could not agree with the petition.
One of which was no resources, which was, it seems to have now been taken off the table.
If it's not completely taken off the table, we have legislation before the proposed legislation before the legislature that
it's been, all right. You put it on the table.
Yes,
okay.
we put it on the table.
Hey folks, this is Jerry Booth. In 1946, when my family started Booth Brothers Dairy, they knew the farmers and where their milk came from. In today's world, everyone is concerned about where their food supply comes from. At Booth Brothers, it's the same as it was in 1946. 27 local farm families who supply us with quality milk, produced right here in central Vermont. So ask yourself, do you know where your milk comes from? Remember, the next time you're in the dairy aisle, reach for Booth Brothers.
This moment. For a number of years. We have been working with the TMDL and the EPA. We have had an agriculture working group of about 25 representatives of the agriculture sector identifying the very things we've been talking about in the way of conservation practices that they felt we could include as part of the TMDL. Those are agricultural community members identifying things they think that can be done, that should be done,
And that has been something we've been creating and building over the last 2 years. And now the legislative proposal before you, or before the legislature, is asking the legislature to make some law that would enable us to bring additional resources to the table to operationalize that TMDL, because the state has to. It has to. We have, thanks to our congressional delegation, the USDA, and Governor Shumlin and others, myself included, working with the USDA, we've been able to, and Vicki Drew, our wonderful partner here in NRCS, we've been able to bring a lot of federal resources to the table, and compliments to, you know, the staff who have worked on that and got this recent grant of $16 million awarded to the state of Vermont, because our plan is one of the best in the country. Congratulations to that staff who helped make that happen.
Was this lawsuit at all a blessing in disguise to accelerate the cleanup?
We were on this path. We've been on this path for a couple of years, and we were pointing to this point in time to begin to roll this out. And as I said,
so this all would have happened without the lawsuit?
We were already well down this path.
You would have started requiring these best management practices.
These are all things we've been talking about for months, aiming to create this piece of legislation, which you should understand has been informed by the conversation we've had with legislators, farmers, environmentalists, and the Vermont community at large. This is not...
I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but most people in the legislature and even the governor concede that this lawsuit has really made everybody have to do things differently here.
Well...
and really step it up.
We were planning on stepping it up anyway, and because the TMDL required us to do so. And the plan that the governor submitted to the EPA that they're actively considering right now have many elements that go to the very issues of best management practice and asking farmers across the state to do that. You need to know what farmers, you know, what farms you're talking about, what parcels of land need those best management practices installed, and why. You need to field check the data, and all that's important information that we didn't have, and we hope to get, in going forward. And if you so, I don't want to speak to that lawsuit with the CLF, except at this juncture because it's under appeal.
Okay, I hear you.
But read the decision. And as to the reasons why I denied the petition, you need to read those and think about those. But the overarching point is David Mears and myself and many of the partners around this issue of water quality in the state government have been aiming at having a comprehensive approach that we're now rolling out. In fact, one of the things that's happening right now is two of our staff are organizing conversation among many of our partners about education and outreach, what we need to be aware of, what we need to be communicating, what are the resources. So there is a commonality of information among the people who are actually working with the farmers, whether they be Agency of Agriculture, Department of Environmental Conservation, or some other partner who's visiting the farms. That's not a legislative request. That's just an operational thing that we started. And so we believe, as exemplified by what the TMDL proposal is and the number of things we propose this year, that we need to up our game in Vermont, and we want to help those that need to install practices do that. And we have marshaled the resources that we believe can help them do that. And so,
because it's ultimately about the lake. I mean, it's not about you. It's not about me. Really, it's not about the farmers. So, but here's what I'm ultimately wondering here. And you know, I'm not trying to get anybody to point any fingers at anybody. But what I really sort of am fundamentally trying to understand here is that it sounds as though, you know, you've talked about cooperation and collaboration, and I think that you're right when you say that you can't enforce your way, or you can't enforce pollution away, but it sounds as though you're looking to be more of an enforcer, but you're resisting saying it at the same time. Help me understand. I'm not quite getting this. What's changed here, and what's new? Help me understand this.
What new is we are upping our commitment to two fundamental prongs. One is stewardship and the other is accountability. And the bigger of those prongs is stewardship.
And is there, are people like me focusing too much on the other end?
Oh, I think so. I want the land owners in Vermont to understand we're serious about complying with the water quality standards of the state. No question about that. I have been before, and we are upping and letting people know we're changing some of the tools in our toolbox and adding to them. To be very clear, we're very serious, and to increase our ability to effectuate the penalties when needed. Now, for those who comply already, that's news that is not that relevant, is it? Because if you're complying, you don't need to worry about enforcement.
Right.
And for those who have chosen, and there's a limited number who have chosen to ignore the rules because they can afford to deal with the penalties we are authorized to utilize, and they can play the game out, we are shortening the process. We're asking for procedures that will enable us to act more quickly and act more significantly. It's for those folks that they give everybody a bad name.
Mm-hmm.
And, so when it's in everybody's interest that when some individual is choosing not to comply,
mm-hmm,
and push back on the system for whatever reason, that we can engage them in a way that either gets them to comply or we understand why that they're right, which... The three cases we've litigated so far, that has not happened. We were found to be in the right, and we've imposed significant penalties with the help of the Attorney General's office.
Well, because I was thinking that too. I mean, if I'm up in St. Albans yesterday and I'm a farmer and I see the Agriculture Secretary come in with the head of the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Attorney General all standing there, I'm thinking these guys are maybe going to be a little bit tougher.
Well, see, what I guess maybe where you and I are just missing here is, some people, and I don't want farmers and landowners to think that because we have enhanced enforcement capabilities that that's the first thing we're going to do. It's not. Our first thing we're going to do is try to educate, outreach, provide technical assistance, and help people comply first. That's what we're emphasizing. And that if we're going to enforce, there's going to be due process, and they're going to have a chance to make their case, because sometimes there's a case to be made. And we want to give everybody a fair shake. But in those situations where someone is egregiously and egregious violator and recalcitrant person, we want to be able to act quickly, swiftly, and meaningfully to get them into compliance, so the waters of the state don't suffer, and the rest of the ag community doesn't suffer by virtue of the bad brush they're being painted with by that individual actor. But the real message here is, we want to help with stewardship, because that's what we understand and have witnessed the farming community to be interested in doing. It's in their interest to do it. Because why? First of all, because they're Vermonters, and it's their water too. Second of all, because a lot of those practices are good for their farm. Third of all, they want to do the right thing. They want to be good community members. And that's been proven time and time again.
And it's all about money. Like it always is.
Well, it's about money. And
I guess money also translates to staffing to get people out, to let people know what this is.
One of the things we've discovered with the additional staff the legislature enables us to have is that our person visits farms, and many of the farms, the small farm operations, not the bigger farms, the small farm operations don't know what the APs are or don't know that they need to comply. That's a fundamental educational problem. People can't comply with what they don't understand, that don't know exist. Now, you could rightfully say some of those people should know.
Yeah, I was going to say ignorance doesn't usually get you and me out of trouble.
Right, but fair point. But we also want to make sure if they are ignorant, that they're not ignorant anymore. Because ignorance is what got us into this problem to begin with. Because you and I and our fathers and mothers chose not to make the right decisions, partly because we didn't know any better. We didn't have the science. We weren't aware of the consequences of our actions.
Yep.
That was ignorance. And we need to overcome ignorance if we're going to solve the problems of Lake Champlain. It's true of so many other public policy issues we have to deal with. You have to overcome what you don't know. And why we've investigated, we've raised money and done investigations on the farm the last 4 years. We've raised a number of millions of dollars just to understand what practices are better out there. so we can make more cost-effective actions, that we can target our resources more effectively to the where we can get the biggest bang for the buck. That's just smart. It's just better intelligently operating our systems on the farm and our regulatory functions in the agencies.
Well, because you know and I know there's been, you know, $100 million spent, and it's the problem is actually worse today than it was then. So if you can spend money, but if you spend it on the wrong thing, you're no further ahead.
That's right. Well, you know, and it's, and to some degree, this is where, you know, businesses are good models. You go to businesses and they spend money where it makes a difference.
And where they make money.
Yeah.
And the equivalent would be where you're reducing pollution.
Correct. And so we're trying to get smarter about how to expend the resources we do have. They've been, in my estimation, too limited in the past. And we're trying to rectify that with the proposal that's on the table. It will not be the panacea, I can guarantee you that. But it will be a significant improvement. And if we do the kind of collaborative work together and stop the finger pointing and saying, you're the reason, no, you're the reason, no, you're the reason, and say, no, we're the reason, let's lock arms and figure out how to do this together, I think we're going to make real headway. And this, you know, at the end of the day, the culture of this state is one of collaboration and working together to solve problems. And that's why this is a special place to live. And that's why I have faith that we're going to be able to do this. You know, I would not be candid if I were said we were going to get this done in the next year or two. This is a long-term problem. It took us a long time to get here. It's going to take some years to get out of this spot. But if we don't, we got to start. We got to start changing things today so we're further ahead tomorrow. And then we'll make changes tomorrow based upon what we've learned between now and then. And we can get further ahead again, and we can accelerate this rate of change. And so I'm confident, Mark. It's not going to be easy. We're going to have some tough conversations. We're going to, as you have asked me, we will do some enforcement where necessary. But what we really are emphasizing is let's do great stewardship. Let's get everybody on board so we don't have to get to enforcement.
Last question. What happens if this money on the tax on the fertilizer, the per parcel development fee, doesn't get raised? You're dead in the water on what you want to do here, or what?
Well, you asked a number of questions actually there. What about the fertilizer fee increase? That fee increase is critical to funding what is the TMDL proposal that's before the EPA and the staffing that we need to operationalize that. We're open to other ideas. If people have other ideas, better ways to raise those funds. If we get no funding whatsoever, that could be a real problem. I don't anticipate that. I think people actually understand that we need to do our share as a state of Vermont. And I think we're in a conversation now about what's the best way to marshal those funds. And as the governor said on a number of occasions, if you don't like the idea which we put on the table, give us some other ideas, but make sure they're realistic and think them through, and make sure they raise the same sum of funds that we need for what we're trying to get done. And I think that's a healthy conversation to have. The legislature is engaged on this. We presented to the whole House last Friday. I'm in a conversation almost every moment I walk into that building around this and this subject, broadly speaking. And that's the way it should be. This is a conversation for Vermont, and the legislature right now is the epicenter, if you will, of that conversation. But it needs to happen outside that building as well. And that was a part of the point of the press conference in St. Albans yesterday. We're not trying to be secretive about this. We want to be very open and direct and clear about what we're trying to propose, which is why I kind of push.
You better. The EPA, you know, has got to see some demonstrated effort.
That's exactly right. But, you know, at the end of the day, as David Mears and I have both said, the EPA is a good reason to do this, but the real reason to do this is it's the right thing to do for Vermont. We don't need the EPA to tell us that we have a problem like Champlain.
But being threatened doesn't hurt. Or you're not willing to acknowledge that, I guess. It seems to me as though that put pressure on. But
I think everybody, you know, we all pay attention to the fact that there's a speed limit on the road. I don't think all of us comply every moment of every day, but we keep it in, you know, in bounds because of that speed limit. And that's what the regulatory process does. It's kind of like the speed limit. It says, you know, there is a boundary here, and you shouldn't cross it. And if you do and you get caught, that's going to be a problem for you.
You're going to be running more proverbial radar then?
I don't run radar.
No, I mean, enforcing the speed limits.
Yeah, we're absolutely, we will. But the good news is if we do stewardship right, we won't need to do much enforcement, and we can spend more of our resources doing stewardship.
Right. You say people don't know the management, best management practices, but everybody knows what the speed limit is. That you can't use as ignorance.
And it's because you drive by it all the time. And we need to have people being aware of what's expected of them.